We're going to head along Govan Road, past the Graving Docks, towards Creative Clyde.
At the junction with Napier Drive and Govan Road, take a left and head east along Govan Road, passing some tenement buildings and a warehouse building.
Looking at these old tenements reminds us of the changing conditions in social housing in Glasgow. During the First World War, as the local men went off to fight, an influx of Irish and Highland people moved in, and Govan's population rose from 9,000 to around 70,000. Conditions suffered accordingly. Trish describes what one political activist did.
Mary Barber organised the women to protest against not paying the rents. They were happy to pay the rents, but against the rent increases. But from the landlord's point of view, that meant that the tenants were in rent arrears. So from there, there was some strife in the area. And this strife quickly spread across Glasgow.
So the influx of politicised people, Highlanders because of the clearances and the Irish because of the potato famine, galvanised action.
And because of the social conditions, it was the women that fought against the maesters in their own backgrounds.
On the opposite side of the road is Govan Road Campus, a large modern building which encompasses several schools. Built in 2006, the campus is located on the site of a former school called St Gerard's Primary. It combines several denominational and non-denominational primary schools and a nursery school. The building houses 15 primary classrooms and 4 nursery classes, plus a gym, assembly hall, drama space and a full-size multi-use pitch.
Keep walking east, past the junction with South Croft Street on the other side of the road and a row of shops.
Opposite us, on our right-hand side, over the road, is the Press Buildings, built in 1890. The carved panels on the building have sculptures of Caxton, Guttenberg, Burns, Scott and Mr and Mrs Cosser. The Cossers ran the Govan Press, which began life as the Govan Chronicle when John Cosser founded it in 1875. The press buildings were designed by Frank Stirrett and constructed between 1888 and 1890 after the Govan Press had to move when its original building was demolished to make way for Graving Dock No. 3, which we're about to see.
Bell's Lounge, next to the press buildings, is one of many examples of Glasgow pubs that are the sole survivors of former tenement buildings, pulled down in the slum clearances in the mid-20th century. Pubs are important parts of the community in Glasgow, and there are many examples of tenement pubs around the city today.
We're about to see a striking reminder of the mighty shipyards.
Which led, of course, to the phrase Clyde built, being an absolute hallmark of efficiency and modernity.
At the corner with Stag Street, turn left and walk a little way down it. Check for cars, and when it's safe, cross the street and take a look at the Graving Docks.
Walk back up the corner with Govan Road and continue walking east. As we walk, keep looking at these former dry docks on our left-hand side. Ronnie will tell us about them.
Heading from Govan towards Glasgow, along the south side of the river, we go past some redundant industrial buildings, we come to some small workshop buildings, and we come to quite a remarkable reminder of the power of the Clyde, the amount of ships that were built there, the size of the ships that were built there, when we come to the Graving Docks. This is an outstanding complex, unique in Scotland, of 3 dry docks with associated quays. The longest dock, which was built in 1894, could hold the largest ships then afloat. It can also be cut into two smaller, it can be divided into two smaller dry docks. These were used for repairing ships. The ships could be sailed into them, water could be pumped out, and work could be done on the ships below the line.
If you look to the right, we're just passing the entrance to a tunnel underneath the dry dock.
At the moment, it's not doing anything, it's redundant, but I there's certainly a movement towards bringing it back into some productive use, perhaps using the dry docks as a marina with some housing around about it, perhaps doing something like Chelsea Harbour in London, perhaps doing something that combines heritage and modern living.
In front of us, in the distance, you can see the Scottish Exhibition and Conference Centre, or SECC, on the opposite side of the river. You can just see the top of the Hydro and the Armadillo.
Many constructions in Glasgow get a nickname as soon as they're built, which we'll talk about more later when we get to the Squiggly Bridge in Route 2.
Glasgow built more ships than any other city, at one point turning out 80% of the world's boats.
On this side of the river, ahead of us in the middle distance, you can see the Science Centre with its tower and the IMAX cinema. Behind that is BBC Scotland.
While thinking about the shipyards, let's recall the achievements of Fairfield, run at times by William Pearse and the Elders.
Fairfield was one of the yards in the Clyde that built the luxury Atlantic liners. In the case of, in this particular shipyard, they built the Arizona, 1879. At that time, the largest Clyde-built ship. It crossed the Atlantic in the record time of 7 days, 10 hours and 30 minutes. Other similar liners, luxury liners, followed, such as the Alaska, the Oregon, the Umbria and the Etruria, all for the Cunard Line. And later still, in 1893, the liners Campania and Louisiana.
Govan Road curves round to the right, but we'll take this footpath and keep walking east, following the route of the river.
The Clyde shipyards over the years produced a whole variety of ships for all sorts of purposes, but the ones that we probably think of most are the huge transatlantic liners that were produced in a number of the yards, none more so than John Brown and Company at Clyde Bank, who produced the Queen Mary, the Queen Elizabeth, and of course the QE2 in 1969.
In 1971, several of the shipyards were amalgamated and the workers formed the Upper Clyde Shipbuilders Union. They staged a mass work-in to protest actions of the Tory government. And it was not just the men who protested.
When you look at archival footage of some of these work-in demonstrations, what you see are absolute sections of women marching together. Now, we know that in the shipyards there were tracers who would trace the patterns onto the steel that were women. We know there were polishers who did French polishing on the woodwork. They were part of the shipyards. They were part of the construction of the ships. They were also working in administration, as in the sort of daily running of the shipyards. And of course, as I said before, as the families. And we know these women marched alongside the men, but those stories are still, I think many of those stories are still to be uncovered and still to be better documented than they are today.
We're passing by gates into the Canting Way property development. Look through the gates for a good view of the Canting Basin, which we'll walk around soon.
The Upper Clyde Shipbuilders Work-In of 1971 attracted international celebrity support.
The work-in itself gained international attention, and amongst other people who made donations were John Lennon and Yoko Ono. Now, they made a substantive financial contribution to the cause and the sort of funds that they were gathering to keep the shipyard working. But they also sent a bouquet of red roses in support. And the shop stewards took those roses and visited the local maternity ward and presented the flowers to women who were at the work-in, either affected or actually in the process of making new people, of giving birth.